Welcome to The Short Way Home. I'm your host, Mike Chin. This podcast is released in conjunction with my new book, The Long Way Home. That book's available from Cowboy Jamboree Press, Good Grit Lit, featuring titles like Joey Pool's I Have Always Been Here Before. You can visit them online at cowboyjamboreemagazine.com. Thank you to Adam Van Winkle, the founder and general editor at Cowboy Jamboree Press, for not only his collaboration on bringing this book into the world, but the art for both the book cover and this podcast. He was responsible for designing that, an image that may look a little familiar to kind of hardcore fans like myself. And if you don't recognize the figure there, that's okay too, because I think it's aesthetically pleasing in its own right. This being the first episode of this short run podcast, I want to take just a moment to acknowledge what this thing is and kind of what it means to be. So the title is The Short Way Home, and it's in large part because I intend for this project to be short. I'm expecting all the episodes to have a fairly short run time, I think absolute max around a half hour or so, and probably less than that for most episodes. And also, I'm not intending for this to be a project that lasts a long time. I think with a project like a podcast, ordinarily it's kind of going to run indefinitely until, you know, time or resources just aren't available to do it anymore. In contrast, I used to have a podcast, Stories of Stories. I discontinued it in part just because it took enough time that it just wasn't viable anymore, given my other responsibilities. This podcast I'm releasing in conjunction with the book coming out, and I only expect to run for, I would say, on the upper end, about 10 episodes, and quite possibly fewer than that. So I appreciate you being along for the short ride with me. We'll see where this thing goes. But the words going home in and of themselves have their own meaning in wrestling. It's a signal phrase used to suggest the end of a match, as in, we're entering the closing stages. We usually have some planned finish for a match, and so one wrestler will say to the other, time to go home. And that's a signal that, you know, they're moving into that closing sequence there. And so with that, that was obviously a big part of deciding on the title of this book, The Long Way Home. There is a story towards the end of the book called Going Home that makes liberal use of that phrasing, and the expression comes up a few times throughout the book in different ways. It's a wrestling book, but it's largely about life on the road too, and just this kind of idea that just as life is a journey, such as the experience of professional wrestlers, that they're just traveling, on the road sort of indefinitely to make it from town to town. And so it being sort of a circuitous route, with the idea that maybe one day they'll make it home. The book itself is delivered in three parts. The first two are separate collections of linked flash fiction before the final stage that's centered on three different two of them are longer form short stories. The other one is sort of a piece of flash fiction in its own right. But all of them, I would suggest, have something to do with arriving at home in their own different ways, whether that means going, to a physical place, or whether that means being with a specific person. It means different things to different characters in different situations there. So for each episode of this podcast, though, I'm expecting to, spend some time talking about the book to an extent. I'm planning to wrap up each episode by actually just reading you a piece from the book that hopefully you'll enjoy. Whether or not you pursue the book itself, that's ultimately up to you. Consider this a free sample of it, so to speak, just to kind of check out what's going on in the book in shorter form. But also kind of the main thrust of the episodes is going to be talking about some of my favorite wrestling matches, and for the most part, just one match per episode. So I thought it only appropriate to kick off this episode with what I think is probably one of the most iconic wrestling matches of all time, which is Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3. So this match went down March 29th, 1987. It had a reported live attendance of 93,137 fans in the Pontiac Silverdome. That number has certainly been disputed over time, but You know, it's sort of a part of the trade in promoting professional wrestling to inflate numbers like that. But still, it's hard to argue. And I think even, you know, pretty conservative estimates still put it up around 75,000 to 80,000 fans. So certainly the largest, you know, professional wrestling show at its time. And WWE would claim that the WrestleMania 32 broke that record with 101,000 fans. That number is pretty widely debated, and you know, no credible source seems to think really that they cracked 100,000. The general consensus, it was probably pretty close to the size crowd there was at WrestleMania 3. But again, 29 years later, you know, the brand had come a long way, technology had come a long way. And so, you know, it's certainly a debatable thing, but at least in my mind, you know, not kind of as impressive as drawing that many people together in the 1980s, you know, as they did for WrestleMania 3. And part of what drew me to talk about this match, you know, I said it was iconic. I think it is quite famous. It's a match that I would certainly list among the most important kind of historical wrestling matches. But I was reflecting on it, and I was thinking about, you know, different matches I might discuss on this show. And one of the things I came back to was this conversation I had back in college. I devoted a lot of time to working on the Lamra on my college newspaper. And at one point, some of the other guys and I on the staff just got into this discussion of wrestling where, you know, wrestling was, has kind of always been sort of taboo. I would suggest there's been a very, you know, few short windows of time, at least in my lifetime, when it hasn't been taboo. And I always say that part of why I'm a wrestling fan is probably has pretty directly to do with that, the fact that wrestling was actually cool to the extent it ever was, you know, during kind of the Hulkamania years when I was, you know, an elementary school kid or younger. And then again, during the, you know, Stone Cold, Steve Austin, The Rock, DX, NWO years when I was in high school. And so to have, you know, those two experiences kind of bookend my childhood and my school years, I think was kind of instrumental in making wrestling, you know, more acceptable and making it something that I would, you know, stay attached to throughout my life. But with that, you know, so these other guys were, you know, from the same, you know, class, they're roughly the same age as I was. I think we were all in some sense sort of surprised to find each other. I think, and, you know, to fall in that conversation, to find that, you know, we were all, you know, fans, you know, at least at one point in our life and at least to some extent still cared. At that point, after it kind of had gone back out of vogue and after we were in college, is a relatively, you know, intellectually elitist kind of place where, you know, not many people would talk about wrestling by any stretch. And I remember I brought up just sort of what I accepted as fact, where I suggested that the greatest match of all time was Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3. And I remember that my friend, especially my friend David, who, you know, had a more critical eye for wrestling much sooner than I did and, you know, does his own writing about wrestling, you know, really kind of questioned that and sort of thought it was sort of absurd and, you know, turned to, you know, picks like, you know, Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat and the trilogy of matches they had in a similar era in the late 1980s. Yeah, you know, and I think in terms of, you know, actual quality of the match, that there's no doubt that there were better matches, a lot better matches. I think, you know, by a contemporary standard where we kind of expect more from wrestling, more athleticism and, you know, more showmanship and whatnot. You know, I think that the idea that Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, you know, wrestling the match that they did, it would be kind of absurd. It's not a great match. It's basically 12 minutes of these guys hugging each other and clubbing on one another and, you know, all building up to kind of, you know, a few key moments that are what everyone remembers. And I think a lot of what this speaks to is the key to a historically important match or what makes a match go from, you know, something that just people are entertained by in the moment to something that becomes iconic. And I think that comes down to the story. This was not the first time these guys even wrestled. It wasn't even the first time that Hulk Hogan body slammed Andre the Giant. They had a pretty well-documented match in New York at a baseball stadium at a show headlined by Bruno Sammartino versus Larry Zbyszko, where Andre was the hero and Hulk Hogan was the villain. And that wasn't the only time they clashed either before this. But WWE kind of took advantage of, you know, just sort of having this new fan base, of having recently, you know, rebranded themselves to appeal more to kids and to have drawn in this whole new generation of fans who wouldn't have any sort of historical base, and just didn't mention the history there, right? And so at this point, Hulk Hogan is, you know, the hero of the show. He's the biggest name they've got. And Andre the Giant's not far behind him in terms of being, you know, a pretty iconic figure, someone who everyone knows. So, you know, recast Andre as a villain for the first time, at least in a really significant way, and put him against Hogan, and it immediately feels like a pretty epic clash. You know, they had this, you know, record audience of, you know, again, I'm going to call it 93,000. Yeah, we could certainly debate that number. You know, would this show have had nearly as many fans had it not been for that match? And I don't think so, right? And I think even the WWE lore would suggest that that's the match that drew that many people together. You know, I think just based on the popularity of the WWE brand in that era, and, you know, just promising a big stadium and promising, you know, basically the full roster performing on the show, I think that, you know, I don't think it's unrealistic to suggest they could have drawn, you know, 40, maybe 50,000 people cold, the way that, you know, today they just announced WrestleMania, you know, a year plus in advance. And when the tickets go on sale, you know, they pretty instantly sell tens of thousands of seats. I don't think it's totally unrealistic they would do something similar back in that era. But I do think that it was this match, Hogan versus Andre, that really pushed those numbers upward, that allowed them to, you know, kind of break that glass ceiling and not just have, you know, say 45,000 people, but double up on that number, because it was such a spectacle of a match. You know, and also, you know, it's kind of a lost part of the lore, but WWE didn't actually announce that this show was going to happen until just a very short while out. I think it may have been like 2 months. I could have that figure, you know, incorrect there, but it certainly wasn't, you know, more than a half year out. And they talk about this on the True Story of WrestleMania documentary that WWE produced, but basically, you know, weren't, you know, entirely sure what they were going to do or where they were going to do it. You know, got this stadium secured, developed a plan to just, you know, run it full, not to block off seats, but to try to, you know, really fill the thing, and on a pretty short timetable. And so I think especially with that short timetable, it was booking a match of this magnitude that really drew people there. You know, and any, you know, serious fan or any fan who, you know, especially rewatches the show with a contemporary eye will tell you that you know, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat versus the Macho Man Randy Savage for the Intercontinental Championship in the undercard was the way, way better match. And I think you could even argue that there are several matches on the show that are better than Hogan versus Andre. But especially that one kind of stands the test of time as an early, you know, kind of all-time classic for WWE. But you know, Hogan versus Andre, nonetheless, if you ask some, you know, casual fan, if they remember watching a WrestleMania as a kid, right, who, you know, people who, you know, haven't studied the history, who haven't watched a show in decades, this is the match that I suspect someone would still remember. You know, it's just so well built from a storytelling perspective of kind of a David versus Goliath kind of scene. Also, you know, cast as kind of intergenerational kind of conflict because Andre was certainly on his way out. The story goes that he was basically ready to retire from actually, you know, physically getting in the ring and wrestling when Vince McMahon pitched him on the idea of, you know, we could just kind of redefine your legacy, give you this one kind of, you know, final cherry on top that you're always going to be remembered for by you playing the villain, and that he went along with it and, you know, to start wearing this kind of a now iconic black singlet that was, you know, sort of constructed to hide a back brace that he was wearing because otherwise he didn't trust himself in the ring like that. And so, you know, this isn't taking anything away from, you know, him. I think that he was a tremendous athlete and, you know, performer, especially for his size, you know, and especially for his era. But, you know, he was performing within limitations for sure. But I think, you know, it definitely did his legacy well to see this thing through. And I think, you know, I think that all the promises that were reportedly made to him absolutely delivered. And so, you know, this is a match that, you know, it's huge by every standard. You know, Andre the Giant was huge. Hogan was both physically enormous, you know, most likely on a lot of steroids at that point. But, you know, a huge muscled man. with huge charisma, and the size of the crowd is huge. The size of the WWE machine at that point in history is enormous. And so all kind of put together, there's a very real argument that this was a peak for the company. They'd obviously go on to, you know, a more sustained kind of financial success and, you know, into far better, you know, kind of objectively speaking matches. But I don't know if they ever produced a more iconic moment than Hogan slamming Andre and then hitting with a leg drop. The fact that he pinned him afterwards to win and retain the world title is almost, you know, kind of gravy at that point. But okay, well, so since I've talked so much about, you know, Andre the Giant and, you know, probably his single most famous match, I thought the piece that I would read from The Long Way Home this time is going to actually be the last piece from the book. And it's called My Father Was Andre the Giant. And the one thing I'll specify, because I think it can be hard to kind of track when you're just listening to it orally as opposed to reading it on the page, is that the narrator and protagonist of this story is female. Okay, my father was Andre the Giant. I never met him. He's dead now. My mother was very small. So small, but that by the time I was 7, I had grown taller and heavier, and upon realizing this was the case, told her I didn't have to do what she said anymore. She told me she didn't have to buy me Christmas presents or cook me spaghetti and meatballs. I came to discover that not only was my mother small, but I was quite big. At school, a boy named Johnny Reds called me Sasquatch, and though I took small pleasure in punching him in the ear, I nonetheless cried when I got home. That's when Mom told me about my father. She explained that by Andre the Giant standards, I wasn't so big at all. He stood 8 feet tall and weighed 600 pounds. I didn't approach such dimensions, besides which my hands were actually quite small. When I was 8, I asked my father why my father didn't live with us. Mom told me about wrestling and how Andre had to travel to different cities to help different good guys. When we watched The Princess Bride, I clapped with glee when Andre came on screen. My hands got sweaty when the masked man choked him into unconsciousness. I wept when my father caught the princess after she jumped from her window. I imagined I was that princess. I watched the VHS tape again and again and threw a tantrum when Mom returned it to the video store. When I was 10, Mom revealed that she and Andre had never been married like other people's moms and dads. When I was 13, she explained that it was a one-night stand, an explanation bundled with a birds and bees conversation, followed by a reassurance that, though she had not planned to have me, it didn't mean I was a mistake. Mom had taken Andre's order at a diner after his match. He ordered half the menu. She refilled his coffee 24 times. When he was done, he tipped her 5 crisp $20 bills. Then he waited in the parking lot, cooped up in his rental sedan, until she was done with her shift, so he could take her home. I tried wrestling in high school, assuming I would be a natural. There weren't many girls wrestling, but even if there had been, my weight placed me squarely between the 160 and 182-pound weight classes. I lost each of my first two matches by pin in under a minute. The third time out, a particularly nasty boy complained to his coach that he shouldn't have to wrestle a girl, and when he had to anyway, cranked on my arm and neck until I said uncle. I quit after that. I grew fixated on my mother's night with Andre. After months of prodding, Mom extended her story past the diner parking lot back to the studio apartment where she lived at the time. He smelled horrible, like sweat and gas. She told me that Andre liked to be on top, but that he was too big and she was too small, and he was set to both suffocate her and physically crush her skull beneath the weight of his stomach. So she pinched the soft sides of his belly until she had his attention, scooted out from under him, and slapped his face. Andre smiled and asked her to do it again. She did it again. It turned out he got off on slaps, and so he let her on top of him. The bedspring squealed, then buckled, and she thought for sure they would break through. She prayed they would stop at the floor and not fall straight through and demolish the apartment below. When Andre came inside her, he produced enough force to rock her entire body and almost knocked her over. I told Mom, at last, I had heard enough. Neither my mother nor I were invited to Andre's funeral. I had come to terms with the fact that he probably didn't remember my mother, and probably never knew I was born. Still, I felt compelled to see him, if just that once. I was in college then. I cut class. When I got to the church, a man my height, broad shoulders, puffed out chest, black suit, sunglasses, stopped me at the door, and I knew he'd ask me for some sort of credentials, or tell me I couldn't go inside. So I cut off him with a giant sob. I told him I was Andre's daughter, and unleashed a torrent of tears. The next thing I knew, I was inside. The church was full of giants. Not just Andre's family, but a cavalcade of men with long hair, with mohawks, wrestlers, the lot of them, who walked with limps and had deep, grooved scars on their foreheads, who drank from flasks that they had stashed under pews, who took off their blazers to reveal muscle shirts and tattoos of women's names and crucifixes and eagles with their wings spread wide, who wept openly on one another's shoulders. The ceremony hadn't started yet. Andre rested in a custom-made casket, enormous, lined in red velvet, his stomach protruded up over the brim. He didn't look that much like me. I told him my name was Andrea, and I was his daughter. I told him I loved him very much. I put my little hot hand on my father's big cold one and held on as if he were mine to keep. Okay, so that's My Father Was Andre the Giant, originally published in a literary magazine called Gravel. And again, it appears in The Long Way Home, my new book from Cowboy Jamboree Press. All right, thank you again for listening. And again, Long Way Home is available from Cowboy Jamboree Press, distributed through Amazon. You can follow me on Twitter @MikeTChin or visit MikeTChin.com for more details.